Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché, and on this episode, TCU goes to that, well, how do we put it? That most wretched hive of scum and villainy known as Dallas, and pulls out a victory over the SMU Ponies 42-34. We're going to be talking about that all today with a full house panel, starting with TCU Hall of Famer Shannon Brazil. How you doing, Shannon?
I'm doing great. Anytime we beat SMU and bring back the hardware, oh, Monday's going to be great. Can't wait to see a lot of my Dallas folks on this Fort Worth side of town.
Well, speaking of hardware, it looks like former TCU player Nathan Hernandez has already started putting that to good use. Is that ribs you're eating tonight?
It is, yeah. They were cooked up especially in our own iron skillet. They're great.
They look delicious, and what a great way to use the iron skillet after a wonderful game. Also on tonight's panel, we've got the velvety pipes of Nick Howard. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, it's good to hear everybody again. Good to see everybody. It's good that we took care of business against those horses. Now it's time to take care of those wagons.
Yes. Well said. And rounding out our panel, we've got the boss, Ryan Zeller. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm good. Always good after a win.
Yes, it is. Well, as I mentioned at the very top of the podcast, TCU comes away with a victory in the Iron Skillet game, 42-34, in a game that up until probably the last, the last quarter, it seemed like TCU was going to run away with this game. In fact, the third quarter, the offense kind of stalled a little bit, and we had some interesting shenanigans throughout the game, including a couple of very weird plays to close out the game, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But before we get started, Shannon, I want to ask you a question, because this is an SMU team that has talent. There's no doubt about it. Sonny has done a good job recruiting when he was at SMU, and we know, based on the last couple of years playing SMU, that they are an offensive threat. And Mordecai is a very capable quarterback, and Rice is an amazing talent at wide receiver. Expect him to be drafted high in the NFL.
Sure. Yeah.
But this TCU defense did something that I think we haven't seen against SMU for the last couple of years, and that was that bend don't break philosophy. And outside of a couple of penalties on Hodges Tomlinson, which we can get into the whether or not a few of those were accurate or not, this defense is starting to kind of come together. Am I missing the mark here, or are you seeing the same thing?
You're not missing the mark. I'm seeing the same thing. I'm loving our defensive play. I'm loving our linebackers play. I'm loving our corners play. And this is what I would say, and I'll let you guys, we'll get into the penalties. But when you watch these games on TV, and they said the referees are letting them play, and that's what they're doing, then let them play all four quarters. Let them bang. Let them whatever you're going to do. If you're going to call it close from the beginning, call it close all through the game. But besides the the knick-knack penalties from the referees, the defense played a solid game. And SMU's quarterback is a great quarterback, and you're right, he will be drafted. And he didn't have his day with us. I mean, we really got on top of him, confused him a lot in our secondary. We forced him to throw throws you hadn't seen him really try to throw all year. He's usually a pretty accurate quarterback. And so we had a great defensive scheme this week, and it panned out. And, again, the score don't really tell the truth to me, because obviously they missed one of our touchdowns. The guy was clearly not down. He's still running with the ball. We got a quick whistle on that. So it could have got ugly, and we let him off the hook with a few of them. But the game was a lot more TCU than SMU. So I'm very excited about our defense. And we're going to need that going on in this Big 12, because the Big 12 is playing some really good football at all the conferences around the nation. I love what I see week in, week out. And when I'm watching other teams play, I get nervous. And then I watch our team. We play, and then I'm like, okay, we're good. But it's going to get exciting around here for our Frogs. It's going to be a big year.
Nathan, how about you? How do you feel about the defense?
I think they look great. You know, it's one of those things we were talking about a couple weeks ago. You know, they're swarming the ball. It's exciting to see. It's good to see that. I haven't seen that in a while. And that's what gives me the most hope, because we're going to need that. Like we talked about, you know, Big 12 has a lot of offensive power. And I mean, from everybody, even Kansas. So we got to get hats on the ball. We got to get people off blocks. People that are free got to come up, make a play. Can't have a lot of missed tackles kind of towards the end of the game. And I understand our defense was on the field a lot, so I'll give that to him. And apparently it was so hot down there to melt a play clock. But, yeah, it was hot down there, so I'll give our defense a little bit of credit towards the end. Get a little tired, so they started missing some tackles, and that's what led to a couple of their scores to keep it close. But, you know, that comes with the weeks. It'll start to cool off a little bit, and I think we'll be all right. We can't play against the refs and a team.
Yeah, no, you certainly can. And you mentioned the heat, and that was kind of an oddball thing because I had to watch this actually on TV. I wasn't able to actually make it to the game this week. Had a prior family obligation, but I was able to catch it online. And the announcers did – well, the announcers do what they normally do, a really bad job. But they did a really bad job of explaining exactly kind of what was going on game mechanics-wise and the game experience there at the stadium. There was an issue with the play clock inside of Gerald Ford Stadium. And what did they tell you guys up in the press box was the reason for that?
So they said one of the play clocks, it was a mobile one that it overheated, and so it was down completely. There was another play clock in the other side of the field that was just on zero the whole time. Like, no, it wasn't going. Whoever was running the scoreboard was terrible. Like, just god awful. Like, all the typical first down, first and second, whatever it was, were always off. Like, the yardage was never right, or they were completely on the wrong down. It took forever for them to add points after it happened. There was no replays, obviously, from the camera end. Watching it wise, my roommate Patrick, he was saying that the camera people were terrible. Like, they were like zooming in on people missing plays. There were no replays, but the media clock worked just fine. So that's where I'm like, okay, come on. Like, at some point the game has to take priority over television, right? Like, I know they can adjust the times on those clocks, so why not use the media clock as a play clock or something? Because you have to rely on looking at the rep. The back judge is the one keeping the play clock, and so if you can't see that, you're not gonna be able to know what time it is, and they're holding the ball because of substitutions and everything, and so it costs us a lot of delay of games towards the end of the game. Like, you have to you either gotta have some way to tell Max, like, hey, this is, you know, the countdown and everything, or you can't call a delay of games in that situation. Like, but going down to it, it was just, that goes back to the way the stadium's being run. There's no way that this is the first time in Texas football history that they've had a malfunction with the play clock and it causing it to overheat. Like, you have to have a backup plan in that situation. There's no excuse for that.
Yeah, there have been a couple of games at Eamon Carter where the play clock didn't work, and the judge and the referee did a really good job of keeping the play clock on the field. It does seem like this was a Big 12 crew. I think there was a lot of confusion about whether this was an AAC or a Big 12 crew, and of course it was a Big 12 crew. But, you know, Big 12 fans shouldn't be surprised when the officiating from a Big 12 crew is less than stellar. I would say less than average on this particular day. But yeah, going back to that game day experience, certainly heard a lot from the fans, especially on Twitter. Water running out, concessions absolutely being terrible. It seems like SMU was just not prepared for a sold out stadium. And, you know, I think what we saw at on TV at the beginning, it wasn't a sellout. Sorry, what?
It was like 80% capacity throughout most of the game.
Right.
They were all in the grass area. Okay. That was where most of their fans were.
Mm-hmm.
Like Baylor fans. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, that gives you an idea as far as how things were run at that stadium. Nick, how did you feel about TCU going into this game? How do you feel like – do you feel like they've matured a bit on the defensive side of the ball?
Definitely, especially with all the changes they're going through, still adjusting. You know, it's only the third game. And then Big 12 play is about to start clicking up here soon. So they're just continuing to still adjust. I feel like the D-line is, I think it's holding its ground. I'd like to see more pressure from him, but that's what you get when you switch to a 3-3-5, more of a plug-and-play type of defense instead of a rotational flow type defense, which was the 4-2-5. So you're not going to get a lot of pressure off the edge. So I think Coach Gillespie is doing a good job by sending some blitzes up the middle, sending some pressure up the middle, which caused some trouble for Mordecai in that game. And another thing with the clock malfunction, they charge all them students $80,000 a year, and they can't get that fixed. So
I think they can call it Party Aid and at least get a working clock. Jeez. Hey, yeah. Shannon, Nick brings up a good point here about the three-man front. And I know in the past, a lot of TCU fans, especially even after this last game, over the last couple of hours, have been really kind of vocal about the lack of pressure we've seen over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks if you count the bye. And the not that we didn't have any pressure against the bye. Sorry, I didn't mean for that to come out like that. But the point is that three-man front is not necessarily meant at this point to be generating sacks, but more for containment and more for the purposes of allowing the linebackers to kind of see where they need to go. And what you're seeing out of the linebacking crew, do you feel like these linebackers are starting to get a feel for this new scheme?
It is. It's a plug and play defense. It's definitely enough. It's to give the secondary time to cover, do what they need to do. And at some point, the D linemen are getting there. I mean, they're getting there, even with three men, even with double teams. The linebackers are doing a great job picking up the running backs and filling the lanes. So I believe in defense. I wasn't sure at first, but this defense is starting to work to perfection, if you ask me. And we're only going to get better. Again, it's going to take a little time. You're not going to see pressure every single play, even though the front three are capable of that because they're so strong. And if you notice, they're doing a lot of twists. They're doing a lot of filling. The outside edges, they're doing a great job, and linebackers are staying in position to fill the anything that's going to come through the middle, any runs, the quarterback runs, and then being in position to play the pass. So I like this defense. It's fast. And that's another thing. We make up what we lack in maybe pressure. We lack in some things. We don't lack in speed. We're fast. We're getting to the ball right now. So a 5-yard completion would be a 5-yard completion and less because of the way we're getting to the ball and we're hitting these guys and we're driving them back. So again, I'm sold. I mean, I was sold after the first couple games versus at the beginning of the season where I was like, I don't know about this, but it's working and we're only going to get better. So I love it.
I would like to see a little bit better reactions and whatnot to misdirection plays, like reverses. They tried to run. Yeah, they tried to do that one. One of them, it was great coverage down the field. So, like, it was the flea flicker one, so he threw it out of bounds. But there was the one, I think it was for a 2-point conversion or something, where they did that. And he was wide open, or he could have ran it in, which I'm surprised he didn't. I thought he was going to. But he tried to throw it, and he threw it in the ground, which I was happy with. But there's a little bit of
vulnerability. That was a blown coverage. It's blown coverage.
Yeah,
it was. That's all that was.
Looking in the backfield, everything. But, yeah, I do want to see them because that's going to come up against OU a lot. So we got to pay attention to that one. But I do think that defense has done a lot better job.
And to your point, based off that, we'll really see this week, guys, about the 3-3. This is where we're going to see about it because this quarterback that's coming into town, if we don't contain him, he'll run all over us. So we're going to see what our front five, front six can do, and we're gonna have to figure that out because if you give this quarterback some lanes, he'll pick up 5, 7, 8 yards, maybe even further as we saw this weekend. So we're gonna have to contain. We cannot afford to have busted plays this week. If we play stellar defense and we don't give up the open lanes for this quarterback to run, I think our secondary will do a great job of holding these guys as long as we don't let the quarterback out of the pocket. Because this is what will happen: he'll go to scrambling and everybody doing their 1-11th, and then they'll break down and start trying to come up. And then he'll dump it over the top, things of that nature. So we've got to contain him so we can have our secondary play what they're supposed to do and not let the deep ball get behind them.
Yeah, I think the last 2 weeks, the competition against Oklahoma kind of showed us the way. Between, what was it, UTEP and then Kansas State, of course, the other night. I mean, both of those teams did a fantastic job of containing the quarterback and also taking away a lot of the options further on down the field. And I think we've got the capability of doing both of those, but yes, it has to be consistent. And the defense has to find a way to get off when you've got those third and long situations. And there were several times at SMU it didn't happen. And a couple of those obviously were because of penalties, which again, I'm a little hesitant to throw a flag for pass interference when the ball is literally 20 yards away from the receiver, or, you know, throw a flag on a third and long, and the quarterback is running for the line to make, and you hit him on the boundary line, and you call him for a late hit out of bounds. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Just give the quarterback the first down? I mean, that's a ridiculous call as well. But yeah, there are several times where we had to get off the field. We didn't get off the field, and allowed it to sustain touchdown drives, which, to be honest with you, this game probably could have been easily over 50 points for TCU and at most 24 points for SMU if we really kind of take a look at some of those plays. Sure. Which is an interesting thing here, Ryan, because from an offensive standpoint, we're putting up a lot of points, and this was not exactly our starting quarterback to start the season. And Chandler Morris is expected to be ready to go for Oklahoma. So, Ryan, big question from TCU fans, and I know this has been a discussion among a lot of the Killer Frogs writers. Who starts Oklahoma? Is it Max Duggan's team at this point, or does Morris get a chance to start?
Oh, my gosh. That's probably the hardest question ever to answer, because you want to put the player out there that can give the team the best opportunity to win, and that may be the quarterback that they have no film on, very little film on. But then again, you know, Duggan, he's not throwing interceptions like he did last year. I mean, he's doing great, and you hate to take the wind out of his sails when he's done everything you've asked him to do. So I think it comes down to, I don't know, if I were the coach and both kids, you know, a coin toss, and it's like, it comes down to who gives the team the best opportunity to win. And then it comes down to sitting those two players down. I know they're friends, and the coach, and explaining it and making sure everybody's on the same page, so there's no hard feelings, and putting that player out there. And I honestly don't know who it is. I don't, the coaches should, but at least we have two. I don't know who will start. I think Duggan will start. But I don't know. I think you put the best player out there to win that particular game. I don't know who that quarterback is. So
yeah, Nick, I know you're a big Max fan. How do you feel about how Max has stepped up here since the Colorado game?
Oh, it's a big improvement from last year. You can see he's definitely got a lot more touch on the ball this year. It's very good to see his improvement going forward. But, you know, I would like to see Chandler Morris, if he does be able to come back, to be able to give revenge against his former team. So that would be pretty nice for him to, you know, show out against his old team.
I had totally forgotten that. Oh, there's that piece that even complicates it. Dang.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a storyline going into this week, especially when we determine who the starting quarterback is. In fact, let's make that, think about it, ruminate on it, everybody, because when we come back and we do our score predictions for Oklahoma, not only do I want a score prediction, but I want a prediction on who you think is going to start a quarterback. So we'll play that towards the end of the podcast. That's a little teaser, they call that in the industry. So for those of you listening, just wait till the end of the podcast and we'll give you guys our thoughts on that. Kind of going back to the offense here, Nathan, the wide receivers have looked really good. QJ's been absent the last couple of weeks, but blocking has gotten better. We even saw a nice block by Max on one of those plays on Saturday. But I want to talk about running backs, because this was a big issue going into this season. Obviously, with Zach Evans leaving for greener pastures, take that however you want, and we end up with Miller and DeMercado, which, to be honest with you, all TCU fans know these guys can run, but the big question mark was, how is this going to play in? How is the TCU running game going to be, especially given the offensive line issues we've had the last couple of years? So now that we're three games in, Nathan, how do you feel about the running game?
So, quick note, I don't know if anybody saw it. It was on Twitter, but I put it in the forum as well. At one point in the game, Miller was he was leading the country in yards per carry, and he was 0.01 yards more than Zach Evans. So, you know.
I did see that. Sorry. Call that a good question.
Yeah, but I love our run game right now. I love that we're sticking to it. That's the key. When we start
more,
all our issues in the past is we've gotten away from it so quickly. Like, The same thing with, you know, our team of the Cowboys. Like you get out of the run so quick and you need to go to pass. You can't, because it's become predictable. Like, oh, they're not going to run the football. We can drop back. We can drop eight. So sticking to the run game is going to be our biggest key this season, especially against OU and all those high power offenses, and controlling clock. But I love it. I love, you know, and it's honestly the whole offense as in general is everybody kind of seems very selfless. I think the coaching staff did a good job of getting rid of a lot of egos at the beginning of the season and in the off season. So getting rid of egos and, you know, people are selfless. They're not saying, "Hey, I want the ball. Throw me the ball. Why would not throw me the ball?" Or same thing with running backs. You know, not wanting to be the main guy. They've bought into the process and bought into the philosophy of next man up. You know, whoever's at running back better be able to perform. We were talking about in the press box, you know, Amari's a little better of a pass blocker. So that's why we usually see him on the passing downs. But I mean, he's obviously still capable of ripping off a 63-yard touchdown. It was actually kind of funny. We were there and there were a couple of guys like to our right, and it was that play, and they were like, "Why is Amari in the game? Like, put Miller in. We need to run the ball." And like they were like, "He's in because he's good at pass protection." Like, "We don't need a pass block right now." And they were like kind of talking crap about him. And then he popped off that 63-yard run. I'm like, "All right, I'm gonna shut up now." But no,
I can
I love
guess who
it.
those individuals work for, but I'm not going to go there on the podcast.
We love everybody.
Oh, we do.
But
We
yeah,
do.
no, and
We're
Miller's
all
a
one
dog runner.
giant, big, happy frog family.
Yes.
But no, that's a good point. I mean, Amari has been fantastic in pass blocking, but now
He's
you have
one of
to, if you're watching film on this team, you got to respect him in the run game. Now you can't just say, "Oh, well, number three's in, it's going to be a passing play." Now it's you don't know exactly what's going to happen, which has been fantastic. Now, Shannon, Nathan said something here that was really kind of interesting, and we've talked about this in weeks past, and that was kind of like the chemistry of this team has changed. And Nathan was talking about how the egos have kind of been put aside. And I don't know if the what we've seen the last couple of years could really kind of be chalked up to quote ego, but it did seem that way, that there were some guys on this team that kind of felt like, you know, I need the ball
One
more. It
ego.
needs to be me.
That
Yeah,
was one
maybe it
ego.
was just one person who's shall not be named. I named him earlier. You can figure that out later. Anyway, but it does seem like these guys are gelling together. I mean, even when we had, what was it, like 10 penalty, eight or 10 penalties on Saturday, I forget. I think they're still throwing flags today. But those guys are coming to each other and they're helping each other out. I didn't see anybody in there really just kind of, you know, taking it to a guy in a really, really negative way. And even on the sidelines, even from what I was able to see, and I kind of went back and I kind of reviewed some of the additional footage I was able to get my hands on. Even on the sideline, these guys are supporting each other in a way that we haven't seen the last couple of years.
Well, they're a family, and they believe in that now. They're fighting for each other. I mean, the chemistry, everything's there. There's no time. There's nothing that I've seen to where it warrants a guy, you know, quote unquote, doing the Tom Brady or the T.O. I mean, it's more of a motivational thing. It's a together thing, right? Even if you saw the penalties on Thomason, they were picking him up. Don't worry about it. Tap him on the butt. All those kind of things. That's what you saw. Because at that point, he got. I mean, think about it, guys. Pretty big game. You get. You know, major penalties that cost us, you know, in the end, it is what it, whether it's his fault or not, you got to pick him up. And that's what I saw a lot of. So it's there. These guys are playing. The celebrations are so authentic. They're so genuine. They're actually happy for the guy who does whatever he does at the time. And you got to love that, right? And so when you see the jumping around and all those kind of things, this game, you saw that from the coaches on down. And I felt so excited for Coach Dykes. Because at the end of the year, this was a special weekend for him. And I don't know if everybody thought about this, but guys, he's responsible for taking our freaking skillet twice. So it's
Yeah.
his, it was his responsibility to bring it back.
Yes.
And
So
that's what he did. So,
he's won it 3 years in a row.
yes, 3 years in
Yep.
a row. So I felt he owed us a solid to bring it back. And so his team, they rallied behind him. That's what I thought, because I mean, he got a lot of nasty, disrespectful Twitter and social media stuff this week. And some of it, I was like, man, I'm not even going to comment on this because this is just flat out disrespectful. But I know the team saw it as well, and they did a great job keeping their mouth shut. They did a great job of doing whatever the plan was. And I'm sure there was a social media presence within that plan this week. They followed it through, and it all paid out. But back to the quarterback situation. We need to throw him off with Jackson, guys. This would be perfect.
Yeah, I didn't want to leave Jackson out of this conversation. Listen, so
yeah, nobody missed, but I'm telling you, Aaron mentioned it. I mean, Ron mentioned throw him off. You throw him off with all three of them. You throw it off with a game plan because at the end of the day, they do have a lot of tape on Duggan, and they don't have much on neither one of the other two quarterbacks. But if we're going to start winning, if we want to really dominate in the Big 12, now's the time where we not so much get tricky, but we've got to throw people off. And at some point, you got to be who you are, but there's got to be some plays where it's like, okay, we can go get a first down or a touchdown on this play right here. So I'm excited about this weekend because I think all that stuff is going to come into play. The chemistry, the quarterbacks, the two dominating running backs that we have. If it in LT talk, we spoke about it yesterday. Our run game is off the charts. And the reason why LT had so much success, guys, and I only speak of him because that's who I played for. We've had a lot of great running backs after that. But the receivers blocked their butts off. We had some receivers that were unselfish, and they blocked their butts off. And a lot of times when you got to get to the edge, you got to run those outside plays. It helps when you don't have safeties and cornerbacks running to the ball in the open field. So if we get that out of our receivers and we can run that ball, continue to run the ball like we have, it's going to be a good day.
You know, I'm curious about your thought on this, Shannon, because I'm getting a feeling, you being one of the only other individuals here that remembers the feeling of the 1997 team and the transition to Francione in 98. Are you getting a similar vibe with the way that this team has kind of come together under the new coach?
That's good. That's really good. That's a good question, because if we all know why Patterson's not here. He reached the ceiling. He couldn't get us to the next level, right? The only difference is we've been, quote unquote, a little successful. Not to the level we want to be, but we won games, guys. Back in our day, back in 97, we went 1-10, and we beat SMU, right? And then you get the switch. You get the switch. And when you got the switch, history was made off the switch. So this could be, to answer your question, the feeling is there. It may take a few years to get it going, but as long as we finish out this season like we're supposed to, and from there I think you'll start seeing some things. So history could be made again, getting us past that hump again at a higher level. I hope all that makes sense. To answer your question, it's yes, because there's some new blood around here. There's some new energy that we hadn't felt in a long time, and we all know this. And so I feel like if we can keep this up, and everybody keeps buying in, and we keep getting the right pieces to the puzzle, history could be we made again at TCU on a higher level.
Yeah, I certainly am feeling that. I'm not going to make any major predictions, because if you watched any football over the course of this season, you'll know that anything is possible. And if you've watched Big 12 football, especially the last couple of weeks, you know that it is nothing but unpredictable. And let's talk a little bit about some of the things that have happened over this last week in the Big 12. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, can we just shout out to Kansas? I mean, did anybody expect? I mean, we thought Kansas was going to be a little bit better this year, but did anybody think? And yeah, they beat Duke, but did anybody think Kansas at this point was going to be at the top of the Big 12?
Not I.
Not at the top, but they showed glimpses. They showed glimpses last year, which was very important for them moving forward to this year.
True. And his fourth season, that's about – remember when Gary, when we first joined the Big 12, he said, give me four seasons. Of course, it didn't take him four seasons, but he did. He said about four seasons, and that, you know what, that may be kind of the right number, because
– Yeah, it was – it's impressive to kind of see where they're at, and that's definitely not going to be a game to sleep on. I mean, Kansas is no longer a gimme in the Big 12, which is good for the Big 12 overall. But, you know, going back to this, a couple of, well, I would kind of say joyful events last week. One is, hey, Nathan, Texas is back.
I just saw that video on my feed today, too, where it was that freezing cold takes Twitter page, and they had that video of Sam Ellinger saying that. And I was like, it's so cringe to watch. I hate it.
Did you see the video of the Texas Tech fan jumping over the wall and doing the horns down to the cheerleaders?
I love that video. I was laughing so hard when I saw that video. It's, you know, you love to see it, because it's funny, is because the two teams that, you know, are leaving us to go to the SEC for more money, you know, bigger, more competition, you know, just got beat by two Big 12 teams. Texas and OU, not to say names, but both got beat.
Well,
yeah, you know.
By supposedly average teams.
Yeah.
Heard that.
Yeah. Teams that were not supposed to be in the top three football conference-wise.
Well, and if you go back, I'll go ahead and play my marker now. If you go back a couple of weeks when we had the gentleman from the Alabama Fan Nation on, and we were talking about that game in Texas, I mentioned that that Texas loss reminded me a lot about that TCU loss at AT&T Stadium to the Ohio State, and the season went downhill from there. Now, a lot of it had to deal with injuries on the part of the Frogs, but you can't say it's not the same thing for Texas, but for them to be beat the way they have since that loss has been, it's been enjoyable as a TCU fan. But it certainly does kind of put a damper if you're a Longhorn fan in Austin about this thought about moving to the SEC when you get beat by the likes of Tech.
That's what they get. They're fine.
Yeah. Well, to my comment that same week, I said this is a game that they played hard in. It was a good game, and it could help their recruiting. Well, I'm gonna flip that and say when you play up to a game like that and you go off and start losing against just regular quote unquote teams that you're supposed to beat because it's not the SEC, it's gonna hurt your recruiting as well. Because that same person that would go there would be like, well, if they're getting beat by this team, how are they gonna win against the Arkansas and you know, the Georgias and all that? So I'm telling you, these kids are very smart nowadays. They're thinking. They wanna go win and they wanna be successful, and that ain't what they wanna see. So again, my issue with Oklahoma and Texas is depth. You got to have depth to play in that league. And right now, the way they're playing, you're gonna see these same results.
Yeah, and West Virginia has had a nice rebound as of late, winning 33-10 against Virginia Tech. I don't know how much to gauge on that particular game. It's kind of like when we played Colorado. It was kind of I was expecting West Virginia to pull that one off, but it was a good game from beginning to end for West Virginia, and they looked pretty solid in that game. And of course, Baylor will remain ranked after escaping Iowa State 31-24. Although that score probably wasn't as close as the final actually made it out to be. That game wasn't as close, I should say, as the final made it out to be. Baylor's looking pretty good, but I think overall, what we're seeing across the Big 12 is that it's really anybody's game this season. And the Oklahoma game in Norman against Kansas State on Saturday night was proof of that. Oklahoma losing to Kansas State 41-34 at home. And that was another one of those games where it was like, I wasn't expecting Kansas State to win. I was expecting them at least make it a game for maybe three quarters, but I was expecting Oklahoma to pull away by at least two or three scores. And to see Oklahoma lose, especially going into the week with the Frogs on Saturday here in Fort Worth, I know there's a lot of fans out there that are kind of worried, like, now Oklahoma's going to be upset coming in, and they're going to take it out on the Frogs. But I see it a different way. And let me see, Nick, let's see if you agree with me or not. I kind of see that Oklahoma's vulnerable, and I think these Frogs can take it to them.
It could be a good matchup. I could see it going to be a very good defensive matchup this weekend coming up, because you can see OU's defense has some big improvements. Of course, our defense has had some big improvements, so I could see it being a low-scoring game, but I know the Frogs still got a bitter taste from just how last year went. So I can, especially when Caleb Williams tore up the field with them last year. So I can definitely see TCU trying to come out on top this year.
Yeah, that was not a fun game to watch last year, especially from my perch atop the stadium. And we won't get back.
Yeah, we're just like pigeons on top of the stadium.
Man, let me tell you, that was not a fun place to sit. But Shannon, I don't. I'm sorry, what was that, Ryan?
I said that on their roof, weren't you?
Yeah, they say go up to the press box. We went to the press box. No, go up even further, and then we get up another level. No, go up even further. No, you're up on the roof. Like, thanks, guys. Really appreciate that. It's like this is like the UT treatment for press, for visiting press. that was nice. Thank you. Yeah, it was great to basically, if you remember that old like electronic football game, that little pocket one with the little dots that represented the players, that was pretty much our perception of what was actually happening on the field for that game. But I digress. But Shannon, Nick brings up a really good point here. Is what?
I'll say it again.
Wait, didn't it rain too that game?
Oh yeah, it wasn't the greatest of weather. Yeah. I mean, if it was going to rain, we were going to be the first ones to know. So I mean, that's just how it worked.
One of a kind yeah, experience, I mean, right well, there.
At least with a lightning strike, we were a lot closer to God at that point. So hey, it's all good. It's fine. But Shannon, Nick Bright brings up a good point about this game, considering the Frogs' motivation given what happened last year. But I don't necessarily agree, Nick, that it's going to be a low scoring game, because I think this is actually going to be the opposite. Shannon, what do you think? Do you think our defense is going to be able to hold OU to a low score?
I'll give my prediction in a little bit because I already have it. I think there'll be some points. I don't think it'll be as high as people think, but I definitely don't think it's going to be as low as people think. There's going to be some fireworks in this game. And I think they'll be early. I think there'll be some fireworks early. And I think people at the halftime, both defenses will have to buckle down and contain our running backs and their quarterback, to be honest with you. That's my only worry. Especially when I saw this quarterback kind of run wild when everything was covered in the back and our linebackers were in depth. And their linebackers were in depth. And he takes off running for, 30, 40, even 160 yards. So if we can contain him, it's going to be a good game, but if we can contain him, it won't be as I don't think it'll be high scoring as people think, because defenses, I think, are going to have to – it's going to be a defensive game. Our defense is definitely going to have to win this game. That's where I see it. So I got my score. I'll give it to you guys here in a little bit, but I think it's going to be a good one. But I do think, to your point, we have something to play for too, because we hadn't beat Oklahoma in a while. They're coming off a loss. They want to get back on track. It's going to be a good game. But we have something to play for too, so I'm not gonna sit here and listen to the fans cry about what happened last week, because Oklahoma's gonna come to play. I mean, they're gonna come to play. They have a good coach. He will have them ready to play, and I know ours will have our guys ready to play. So I'm looking forward to a good game.
Well, Nathan, how about you? Do you think it's going to be a high scoring affair, or do you think this is going to be a defensive stalemate?
I think it's going to be a little bit of both, like Shannon was saying. I think either early on or late, the offense is going to be rolling. And at one point, the defenses are going to buckle down a little bit. Like with SMU, it started out like seeming like we were going to kind of control a lot. And then that last quarter, they just started kind of rolling and going hurry up, which, kind of hurt us a little bit. Hopefully we've adjusted to that this week. But I think it's going to be like we were talking, like Shannon was saying, like it's going to be one way first half or second half, and then it's going to be the other way, the opposite half. I think it'll slow down or speed up kind of towards the end of the game. This OU team kind of reminds me, and I don't mean this in disrespect towards them. Like, obviously they're a good team. It's reminding me of their 2014 season, where you kind of don't really know what they have and like what they should be doing. They went into that 2014 game with us. They were 4, we were 25. And I kind of equate that to their Kansas State game, where, they were 6. Kansas State was unranked at the time. But they got shocked. And so I feel like that's kind of playing out how their season's looking, is that 2014 year where they had a lot of potential, but they didn't really do a whole lot with it. And it kind of came back, and I don't remember what they finished that year. I think it was like 4-8-4 or something like that. They lost a couple games after they lost to us. But yeah, that's what I'm seeing from this Oklahoma team right now. But they're a very dangerous team.
Yeah, certainly that was one of their worst seasons, if you want to call it that, over the last, decade. But for sure, there's a lot of parallels between that 2014 game and this game. And Ryan, we learned the kickoff's going to be 11 o'clock in the morning for the OU game. And that 2014 game, I went back. I thought it was an 11 o'clock game, but I was incorrect. I was reminded on on the forum that it was actually a 2:30 start. And I went back, I took a look at the pictures on my phone with the student storm in the field. Sure enough, that happened somewhere around 6:25 in the PM. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see these, if these similar parallels kind of play out. And how are you feeling about this OU team, given what's happened up to this point coming into Fort Worth?
So going into this season, I was telling my husband, he was telling us, okay, I think we're going to lose to these teams. We're trying to see where we are, bowl eligibility, and where we fall in the conference. And he thinks we're going to lose to OU and Texas and OSU. And so I, and West Virginia, actually, which now he knows nothing. But I have felt very confident about OU. I just think it's our time. And to what Nathan said, we just really don't know how good they are. And they're definitely a good team, obviously, but there's still a lot of questions out there, especially after this past weekend. I will say I watched that game between OU and K-State, and I was just like, oh, both those teams can be really good at times. And I have not seen that. I don't feel from TCU yet. I've seen that we're good, but I've not seen that, you know, we're so but I think I have it in us, and I think it could come out this weekend. It's parents weekend. It's an 11 o'clock game. The TCU students showed that they could get up at the wee early morning of the hours and be at a football game. So I think we will have a full stadium, and it's actually going to be around 85 degrees. I think it's going to be electric, and I think we have a shot at it. I do. We're definitely the underdogs, no doubt about it, but I think we'll win.
I was going to say, so I think that Coach Dykes is doing a good job of, like, trying to get the students involved. Like, I don't know if y'all saw, but today, or I think it's tomorrow, he's buying coffee for everybody from, like, 8 to 10 a.m. Just because of how well they showed up at the SMU game. And I know, you know, it's literally across town, but still, like, kind of, you know, doing a good job getting them involved, because they are a huge aspect. If going back to that 2014 game, that was a massive state or massive crowd. Like, it was a bumping environment. And like you said, we stormed the field, and it was a very electric game, like, the whole time. You know, crowd was involved the whole time. It was 2:30, so it was a little later, but I think that there's some reward for them too. And they're kind of starting to see that if they show up to games, you know, we play well, we win, we do better, you know, and we don't get 11 a.m. games.
Yeah, well, hopefully not from here on out. But, yeah, a big shout-out to the students, because the students did an amazing job and have really all season long. And I do have to commend the athletic department. Go ahead and these kind of incentives and this wonderful kind of thank yous to the students. They've been doing it. If you haven't been following TCU on Twitter, the athletic department, and you got to go and check out TCU football, because they're constantly shouting out the students in a way that I really, Nathan, to your point, I really haven't seen them do this very much since probably the 2014 season. And
yeah,
been a really, really nice turnaround, and I think the students have responded really well. Shannon, I think you wanted to say something there.
No, I was going to say a big shout-out to Coach Dykes, because he was out there early in the morning handing out donuts, too, and I saw that on social media. I thought, I was like, man, that's good, man. That's a big deal. Hadn't seen that before, and maybe I missed something, but to be out there handing out donuts, I think it was Dunkin' Donuts at that, with the students there that are in line, him and the coaches, man, that was a big deal to me. And I thought, man, that's pretty cool, man. So big shout out to Coach Dykes for that.
So we were there at the Fort Worth Central Station at 7:30 to catch the 7:44 train to Dallas. And there was a train, I think it's an hour before and then an hour later. And so you can go to Killer Frog's Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And I videoed the whole trip, like, off and on throughout the whole process. And I was telling Shannon earlier, I mean, it just stole my heart. It teared me up to see the hundreds and hundreds, I'm not exaggerating, and hundreds of students piling in and just making that whole train, every car purple. I mean, I really thought that would there be a handful that would take the train. It was unbelievable. So, and then I found out, I saw from TCU Barstool that they had been on the earlier ride, same thing. And then later we had one of our press guys on the later ride, and he said it was the same thing. But I have to, we are such like small town people that we were all completely lost. The easiest part of the whole process was just buying our ticket for $12 round trip, you know, 5 days ahead of time. Because once we got there, no one knew what they were doing. No one knew which direction. We were so turned around. We had people from Dallas literally telling us, okay, for this train, you're going to be going that way, and you're going to need to be on this side of the track. So we, at one point, we lost about 30 students because they accidentally got on the train headed back to Fort Worth. So I think they probably made it back, of course, but it was just, they were just, and the students were so respectful, so well-behaved. Even the drunk ones were just, you know, just amazing. I was so proud to be an alumni that day, really proud. So shout out to the students.
But you're not going back next year, or but you're not doing that again, Ryan, you said?
I'm not. I'm never doing it again. I'll never do that.
not because of the train, but just because of the overall game day experience, right? Just clarify.
We didn't touch on this, and I know we're trying to get this done in an hour, but I will say I will never go to an 11 o'clock SMU game. A, the fans are, they hate us with a passion, and if I were Sonny, I would have left too, because the way that they're treating him is ridiculous. That'd be like us treating like Coach Schlossnagel like crap because he went to A&M. Just not right. And he was at TCU before he came to SMU. I would like to point that out. But anyway, it was miserably hot. They were not ready for the amount, the masses of people. They should have been. It was Parents Weekend, and they knew how many tickets they had sold. They did not have any free water stations. People were passing out. It was unseasonably hot. And it was kind of a miserable experience because
they're used to high school crowds.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I'll be honest with you. So one of the reason why I wasn't able to make it to Dallas is that my daughter had a college visit in Abilene. And so I went to an ACU game, which, by the way, ACU has done a fantastic job of mimicking kind of the game day experience you have in Fort Worth. They've done a great job with that. And that's not a slight to ACU. They've just, it was a really good game day experience. But I remember I'm sitting in the stadium and all the Killer Frogs writers are on a group chat and they're going back and forth. My phone's been blowing up all day long hearing nothing but complaints about the game day experience at SMU. And here I walk into Abilene Christian University and they heads above what SMU offered as far as a game day experience. I mean, it was amazing. It felt like a great atmosphere. It was a great experience. So shout out to ACU for that. That was fantastic. And SMU, get your act together. I mean, goodness gracious. What was it that Nick was saying? $80,000 for tuition? I mean, you know, spare some for, yeah, bottled water. I mean, it doesn't even have to be, you know, Evian.
Dixie.
We'll take Ozarka. That's cool. Yeah. But, you know.
I'll take great value.
Walmart brand's always good.
To get a water and a beer. And I was in line minimum 45 minutes. There are other people that were in line over, like went down in the middle of the second quarter and didn't get back to the middle of the third quarter. That's
45
ridiculous.
Minutes for a beer? What did they have like a craft brewer there actually brewing the beer for you?
No, I got a Miller Lite. I got a Miller Lite, but it was ridiculous. And people were like, well, you should have
been in line to get water.
The concession lines were just as long. So I was like, I'm getting alcohol and water. And so that was ridiculous. Now I lost my train of thought. But I had something amazing to say. If I remember, I'll say it here in a second. But I'm glad we – oh, I was going to say, did y'all know that the ending score of our game was exactly the same score as what SMU beat us the last year when Sonny was their coach? It was the reverse.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that.
Yes. Wow. Interesting, huh?
It's been a very historic year so far. So hopefully the Frogs can continue that trend and we see a repeat of 2014 on Saturday as the Sooners, as Nick pointed out, bring their busted wagon into town. And let's go ahead and let's get that prediction for this upcoming week to end the podcast. And remember, we're looking for two predictions here and we'll start with Nick. Score prediction and who's going to be the starting quarterback.
Starting quarterback going with the Heisman candidate, Maxie D for sure. And I got TCU winning 23-20. Keep it low scoring, cutting right there in the middle. I will not be at the game, Yeah, I feel like TCU has been doing good without me being at the game, so I'm just going to keep it that way. So
there's that superstition again. I am actually wearing the Nike shirt from 2014, so I know you guys who are listening to this, that makes for a great podcast for you not to be able to see my shirt, but I am wearing that from 2014. All right, Ryan, what's your predictions?
I think Deggan will start, and I think this it's going to be a 34-35 just heart attack ending. That's on okay. the good end.
So, okay, so you said 34-35. I didn't know if you were leading off with the TCU score. So you are predicting TCU wins 35-34.
Yes, and we storm the field.
Okay, all right, just checking. All right, Nathan?
So my score, I'm going just under Ryan. I'm going 35-33. I think it is going to be a nail-biter. But I think, like I was saying earlier, defense is kind of buckling and slows down a little bit towards the end. In terms of quarterback, I'm going Max. I think Chandler only dressed out last week just to mess with SMU a little bit. Because come halftime, he wasn't even dressed out anymore. I think they just had him like that just to like say like, oh, we don't know who's gonna play, so whatever. I think they're gonna take their time a little bit because you know we do have Jackson, and the way our quarterbacks have been playing right now, it is very similar to our run game, and. Whoever's in is capable of, you know, doing well. So I think that they're okay with letting Chandler get a little more recovery.
Okay. Shannon?
Okay. So I'm gonna throw some things out here. Score, I'll go with score for 27-21 TCU. I think they're going to start Max, but I don't even think Chandler's going to be in the second spot. I think Jackson will be. I think they need to rest a little bit more. This is going to be a physical game. This is going to – again, Oklahoma's a good team. It's going to be a battle. And I don't think he's ready for that right now health-wise, okay? So I think Jackson will actually be the guy that'll be getting some rotation in there. And then I think we're going to take one defense. We're going to take one to the house. We're taking a pick six to the house. We're taking one to the house, baby.
So our offense only going to score three touchdowns?
What did I say? 27, yes.
27-21.
Yes.
So maybe two touchdowns for the offense, one touchdown for the defense, and
we'll just say we missed a PAT.
We're gonna do that because I mean I'm looking at it. It's gonna be some defensive. We're gonna get stopped, but I'm telling you, it's gonna be that middle range 21-27 type game, and defense is gonna take one to the house.
You think Hodges Tomlinson bounces back this game?
I think so. I think he's gonna have a big game. He's a competitor. I know him personally. You know, anyway, from training and doing the things we did in offseason, his speed coach is my girl's speed coach out of TCU. And so I know personally he's upset about that. He's one of those guys, yeah, he let it go, but he's going to redeem himself. He's got a big game.
Yeah, you know, to that point, I will say on that question, Nathan, I think Hodges Tomlinson is going to bounce back big time. And one of the things that I mentioned in the past was his – I kind of felt like there was like a lack of passion on his part. You know, I saw a lot of passion on Saturday against SMU, and I think he's ready to go. But prediction time. Max will start, and I totally agree with Shannon on this. I'm feeling that Jackson is the number two come Saturday. I think Chandler needs a little bit more time to rest, and I think that throwing him out there right now with OU, I don't think that's probably going to be the wise decision. I do, though, expect that he will be suited up on the sideline and probably in warmups just to kind of get things going. But Max will be the starter. I'm going to go a little bit different, guys. I'm going to say TCU 45, OU 31 in this game.
Woo! That was the winner.
And I hope you're right. I hope I am too. But here's how I'm getting to that score. So I am saying 6 touchdowns for TCU and 3 points. But I agree with Shannon. I think we're going to get a score either on special teams because I think OU is stupid enough to kick it to Davis, or we're going to get a pick six in this particular game because I think this is the game where the defense pins their ears back and starts blitzing and brings pressure, and I think that's going to start causing a lot of problems because you haven't seen a lot of that. You saw a little bit here and a little bit there, but I think this is going to be the game where they just kind of, you know, take that leash off the defense and let them go.
Yeah, I think they've been hiding it a little bit.
I think they have, and I think this is the game they've been circling and they've been looking forward to, and I think this is going to be a big game. And as much as Hodges Tomlinson had gotten beat on a few plays on Saturday, Rice didn't beat us. It wasn't him. You know, it had to be the other players on the team that had to score for us. So even though there was a couple of plays here and there, he did his job. He kept that guy in check because he could have easily gone off for 200-plus yards against us. And we've seen that certainly over the last few years with SMU. So I think this is going to be a really good game. I think it's going to be a defensive game at first. I think OU is going to start to make some adjustments in the second half. I think you're right, Nathan. You said it's kind of a battle of two halves earlier on. I think that's going to be the case here, but I think TCU, just like we did on Saturday, we'll figure it out, and at the end, we'll come away undefeated in this one. So, there's our predictions, and of course, if you want to make your own predictions, you can go ahead and sign up for a free account and go to killerfrogs.com and make your prediction on the TCU Frog Fan Forum. And with that, we have come to the end of our podcast. We do want to thank everybody who's out there listening to us. Of course, the podcast is available on Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. And of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com and read about TCU athletics on the Fan Zone. Or like I mentioned before, go to the forum and just kind of let us know what your opinion is. What do you think? Do you think we're wrong? Do you think we're right? Do you think that you want the recipe for Nathan's ribs? Whatever it may be, go ahead and post that on the forum. And, Nathan said fat chance. You're not getting that recipe.
That's a secret.
That's a secret recipe. Sorry. The Colonel ain't the only one with a secret around here. So thank you all very much. We have come to the end of the podcast. It's the time where we all get our frogs up and we get to say,
Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.